Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. My boss is supposed to be making the presentation, but she is in the hospital with a family member, so I am filling in. So any questions, I'll be sure and take back to her. But I'm going to discuss pharmacist integration in a collaborative care model in underserved communities that we've done through our community-based research program. And I, like the others, have no relationships to disclose financially. We started in 2008 with a community-based research program, really to model after our tripartite mission at the School of Pharmacy, which is education, research, and service. And so our goal in creating a community-based research program was to increase access to care, improve patient outcomes, and evaluate the impact of the services that we could provide. The majority of our work since 2008 has really happened within the 18-county northwest quadrant of Mississippi, which is the Mississippi Delta. And in the Delta, it's a very rural area. There are very few providers. There is a pharmacy in most towns. There's a high level of poverty. There's a large African-American population. There's a large chronic burden, a large burden of chronic disease with a lot of poor outcomes. And when we take that 18-county Delta area out of Mississippi, we go from being ranked 50th to being more normalized in when we look at national data. So the majority of our chronic disease burden is really held within those 18 counties. We've done a variety of community-based projects in this area, and the one that I'm going to really focus on today is the Pharmacy Cardiovascular Risk Reduction Project that we've done. The majority of our projects have been in chronic disease. We've done some with HIV and prostate cancer, and we've got a new one with transitions of care from the academic medical center into communities. But the one that I'm going to really focus on is a partnership that we have with the Mississippi State Department of Health and the CDC, and that's our Pharmacy Cardiovascular Risk Reduction Project. The objective is really to implement pharmacists' medication therapy management services in a collaborative model in four different Mississippi Delta region clinics. And what our target population is to affect the risk factors associated with cardiovascular disease being the ABCs, the hemoglobin A1C, the aspirin use, blood pressure, cholesterol, and smoking cessation. We started this project in August of 2011, and it continues today. So what is medication therapy management? I'm hoping that some of you in the audience know this, but it really is a group of services provided that are independent or can be independent of a medication product. And it encompasses a broad range of services, and I'll kind of talk about that in just a second. When we talk about how our project here in the Mississippi Delta works, we have a referral process. It mainly comes from the providers in, and I'll show you in a second, but four federally qualified health centers. We started doing it through EHR-generated reports where we looked at high-risk patients, and we started in 2011 just looking at those with a hemoglobin A1C greater than 9. And over the years, the health department has asked us, you know, add in just those with hypertension or add in just those with dyslipidemia. The majority, over 80% of our patients have, they're at high risk. They have diabetes, they have hypertension, and they have dyslipidemia. When we intervene, we work in collaboration with the care model at the different clinics, but these are individualized meetings one-on-one that do take a long period of time as we go through the core elements of the MTM visit. We do a comprehensive med review on every patient. We really find out their medication history, what hasn't worked in the past, what they're currently doing, what they tell their provider they're doing, and what they actually do. We do a medication reconciliation and make sure that what's in within the EHRs. When we started the project, some of the clinics didn't have an EHR. We've through the years, all four clinics are now up and running on an EHR, so a lot of the times what was in the paper chart was nowhere near, and a lot of times what's in the EHR is nowhere near what the patient actually does. We do develop an individualized medication action plan for each patient, and that comes with with the self-management piece, but also the whole purpose of the medication therapy management visit is to identify any potential or actual medication-related problems and work to resolve those. In the four clinics we do in Mississippi have collaborative practice, so we can adjust and modify medication therapy in our patients and follow up on them. And a large majority of the time spent with the patient is doing education on self-management as well as disease state and medication education. And then, of course, we document everything that we do within the EHR. We're located in four different counties in the federally qualified health centers listed here, and a pharmacist comes on site and provides these services 2 to 3 days a week, and currently we have about 524 patients enrolled. The demographics are, the majority of our patients are female. I think others mentioned that as well in their projects. Mean age is around 54. The average number of medical conditions for these patients is around 6.5, and the number of meds really ranges in this group, but they take an average of 8.4 meds per patient. As we've worked, we've identified over 4,000 drug therapy problems, is DTPs, and an average number per patient is about 8 drug therapy problems that are actual or potential. And as you break it down with those with just one, are over 99%. Rarely ever do we see a patient that doesn't have a medication-related problem. And then, as you notice, those with over 5, when we see, is over even half the population as well. The things that are needed when we identify those drug therapy problems are oftentimes that they need additional drug therapy. In the high-risk diabetic patients, it may be that they're not on an ACE inhibitor or not on appropriate therapy that they should be on. It may be that they were prescribed it but don't take it. It may be that the dosage is too low. Their A1C is 13 and they're only on monotherapy. Getting them on additional therapy or raising the doses oftentimes can bring those numbers down closer to goal. And then noncompliance is oftentimes a big piece in this population that has limited resources. So we work to resolve those and get them connected with social workers that can get their medicines for them. We do look at clinical outcomes, and we look at basically hemoglobin A1C, blood pressure, cholesterol, and then also we look at weight. But we know when we started this in the diabetic patients that, you know, without an intensive weight training, that oftentimes patients' weight will increase when we get them on the appropriate insulin therapy. But as you see, statistically significant values there for changes. This is all patients, so they may not have high blood pressure. We still get a blood pressure check on them, and this shows over time those that are statistically significant. We also look at a subset of patients that are our high-risk patients, and these are patients that come with an initial A1C over 9%, or they are hypertensive when we see them. And this shows changes over time as well, and as you'll notice, the changes are all statistically significant over time for those patients. So what our project has really done is really increased our community partnerships. And this project, I will say, came out of the first project that we had in our community-based research project in 2008. We really concentrated on community pharmacies in the first year of that project because we knew there was a community pharmacy in every town. And what we found is when we would find medication-related problems and we would make recommendations back, the health centers, we were not getting any feedback from the health centers. We would say, do we need to call you? Do we need to fax you? And we would never hear back. And so I met with the CEO back in 2009, and she said, is there any way you would put a pharmacist in our clinic? We really need, you know, we really think that we could utilize that person on our team as well. And so that's what really spawned this project when the health department reached out and said, could we put one in different federally qualified health centers. So it's really strengthened and developed that relationship with the community health centers and with the patients and the providers as well. And then we've had great clinic administrative support for the services. We're used as a drug resource within the health centers as well, and as well as doing education for the providers that they reach out to us and want. So I would like to acknowledge the Mississippi State Department of Health for sure for this grant project, and then it takes a team of us to get this accomplished. So our community-based research team at the university is also acknowledged.
Thank you so much. We actually have quite a bit of time for questions. Does anyone want to have a question that they would like to ask our speakers?
For Amis Perez.
And maybe the speakers can come up to the mic.
When you provided the information about the people that stayed in the program,
the retention
yeah. rates, were those, since it was a number for children, right? Were those numbers children only or children with their parents? And the second part of the question is, what do you do with the people that were dropping out? What efforts were done to try to get them back to state? Because considering being Latinos, I imagine that it's a hard, it's hard to convince them to come back when they just decided I'm going to go back.
So just to clarify, the first part of the question is, Who, with the retention rate, are we talking about keeping in touch with the child or the caregiver? It's the caregiver. It's communication with the caregiver. So if we lose contact with the caregiver of that child, so whoever signs up as the caregiver when the child is in, the family is enrolled in the program, that's who we consider the primary contact. We have several, so if we lose touch with this population, also understand that this population moves a lot between the Dominican Republic and New York City, so sometimes they're gone for a certain amount of time but eventually come back. But this is just at that point in time, these are the people with whom we've lost touch. So we have a couple of different options. We send, we call over a two-week period multiple times during the day, and then we send, I think, three mailings, and the final one basically says, we're going to stop reaching out to you. If you decide at a later date to come back into the program, we'll accept you back. So.
Any other questions? I have a question for the speakers. Many of you sort of talked about EHRs, and that's a topic that's very interesting to me. In your work, how essential do you think it was that the EHRs were integrated, or were they integrated across the health centers that you have worked with?
What do you mean by integrated?
Like they use the same platform.
So for the health centers that I worked with, they did not all use the same platform,
okay.
But they have the same functionalities, and health centers, EHRs have a lot of flexibility, and providers, networks, hospitals are able to change it to meet their needs, and so I don't think that the brand matters that much. What matters more is the thoughtfulness that went into implementing. A lot of sites have implemented EHRs that were kind of boxed for them and given, and then at a later date they have to go back and determine what hasn't been working and how to change it, and it's harder to do it after it's already implemented. Each change takes a long time. It takes providers, care teams a long time to get used to changes and to adhere to the new workflow.
Does anyone else have any other questions?
First decided or thought how we're going to do this, there were a couple of things that were issued. One is there's already no extra time in the clinic visit, so how are you going to sort of justify including some measure of diet physical activity that's going to be able to work into the normal workflow and not sort of jam up the whole process as far as, making patients with encounters last longer than they're. But what we decided on was, you know, the five questions that we asked are relatively short. So they give us that kind of flexibility in regards to being able to at least ask questions that we know are commonly used in much larger sort of population centers in New York City. So that was a good thing. They're not ideal for measuring diet and activity on an individual level if you're trying to track people over time, right? So I mean, but those measures, if you're doing like a food frequency or trying to see, so that's more time than we have. So you know, we're trying to initially just get try to get a snapshot of what our patients look like in a way that we can contextualize them in a larger sort of context of the environment. But we did, I mean, you know, with the EHR is complicated because it doesn't always work like it's supposed to work. And then sometimes there's we had a lot of back and forth with our clinical staff related to, you know, well, this is not popping up like it's supposed to, or it's, we can't bypass the screen, and all those kinds of sort of logistical issues around the IT of incorporating it. But, you know, in time, they all sort of buy into the mission, right, which is to be able to systematically measure this kind of information. So they're on board as far as that goes. And the us being able to keep the questions as short as possible, and then work with our information technology to make it work as smoothly as possible. It was a kind of an ongoing process, and it takes some time. And like you know, we mentioned before, you know, incorporating these kinds of things into the EMR is sort of it's a good thing about the electronic health record, but it's also not a fast process. So you know, you have to sort of be thoughtful about what kind of information you want to include, and then how it is you're going to be able to sort of extract that information on the back end after you're finished with it, which is not nothing. I mean, it takes a lot of time to think about how you're going to do that. You know, so mm-hmm. it is definitely a process. We did get some pushback, but you know, as we're going into sort of the second year of data collection and trying to figure out, you know, what's feasible, what's not, we're sort of taking into consideration these kinds of things about, you know, can we really afford to do this annually? Maybe have to do something like every 2 years, every 3 years, something like that. So, sort of an ongoing process.
Any other questions? Okay, well, the speakers might be around for a little bit longer. If you wanted to come up, feel free to ask them, to meet them and ask them maybe more specific questions that you have. Thank you, everyone, for attending.